freedom is the right to tell what they do not want to hear. CNN, MSNBC, Fox News. Tired of the same repetitive government narratives? Then wave goodbye to the distractions and rhetoric of corporate media. For this is Anti-Media Radio.
But I want to get the language right.
The government is in trouble.
You're all a bunch of slaves. Bunch of slaves.
What we need in the United States is not violence and lawlessness, but is love and wisdom and compassion toward one another.
What's your definition of me?
And now, here's your host, S.M. Gibson.
My name is S.M. Gibson, and I am the host of Anti-Media Radio, your alternative to the mainstream corporate agenda set out by this media, by your government. We're here to give real facts, not propaganda. I am the emancipation propagandist. Make sure to check us out 5 nights a week, same anti-media time on ECY.TV, Monday and Wednesday with Mr. Nick Burnaby, Tuesday and Thursday with myself, and Friday with Miss LaVon. 594 Americans have been killed so far this year by police officers. We're going to get into that a little bit later on, more in depth than we usually do tonight at the bottom of the hour. We have the great Lou Kel Giovanni calling in, one of our great writers, and he's going to get more in depth about that. But 594. We've also seen 63 officers die in the line of duty. And again, die in the line of duty and killed in the line of duty are two completely different things. Because of those numbers include 16 auto accidents, 11 heart attacks, only 16 by gunfire. We've seen 1,376 Americans shot in the city of Chicago, 238 homicides so far this year, with their strict gun laws do not seem to be working out. Saudi Arabia, which we always like to talk about as well, looks like the cables put out by WikiLeaks is definitely not a lie. We are still holding at 100 beheadings so far. All information out of the country has completely dried up. The big news right now out of, you know, America's wonderful ally, Saudi Arabia, is their foreign minister, their former foreign minister, has passed away. He held that position for 40 years. He retired just 2 months ago. So he's had his hands in so much that has gone on via that country. He lived through four different kings. And that's basically the biggest news out of there. We still striving and trying and pulling every resource I know, and there is nothing coming out of there right now as far as executions. We're also going to talk a bit about China tonight and the entire economic system of what's going on, and we're going to hopefully talk about economics where it doesn't bore people to death, because I know that can be a very boring topic, but it's a very important topic and how it can reflect on our lives. As always, joined in the studio tonight by Mr. Shannon Madden. Shannon, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing absolutely wonderful.
How you been doing?
Absolutely wonderful.
Good, good, good. So what's on your mind tonight?
Well, I mean, you know, really, where do you want to start? Let's go ahead and talk about China, the elephant in the room.
I tell you what, we're going to have one of our great writers, Claire Burness, call in here in a little bit.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, so I'm going to let her go down that road, if that's cool with you. I tell you what, let's go ahead and, we don't usually go in this early, let's go ahead and jump into the callers. Area code 804, welcome to Anti-Media Radio. I'm your host, S.M. Gibson. Tell us your name and where you're calling from tonight.
I'm Trey. I'm calling from Richmond, Virginia.
Trey from Richmond, how you doing?
I'm doing good, brother.
What's on your mind?
I'm just watching the news. I'm looking at tomorrow at 10 a.m., the Confederate flag is being dropped from Charleston, South Carolina. So as of tomorrow at 10 a.m., racism in America is done.
you make a very valid point.
You feel the sarcasm in my face, right?
Yeah. Jack?
So tomorrow at 10 a.m., racism is done in America. You got to be fucking kidding me. Well, excuse me. Freaking kidding me.
Well, you know, the people's make-believe symbol of the hate is going to come down. And as we both know, nobody's hearts are going to change tomorrow. If anything, it's going to make these hateful people resent things more,
right.
And it's going to solve nothing. You know,
exactly.
I wish it would solve something.
No, what it's going to do, what I want to put out to people is what it's going to do, it's going to wake up sleeping dogs. You're absolutely... Your rednecks who live their lives, this is going to awake them. It's going to be a problem. I'm worried about when they try to bring that flag down, they'll tell them what might happen to Charleston tomorrow. You know what I'm saying? But
you know, fingers crossed, nothing happens crazy. And you know, the situation with that is you know, it's kind of like with guns, and they say they're going to take your guns away, and as soon as they do, gun sales go to the roof, and the same has happened here. They've said we're going to take Confederate flags away, Amazon stops selling them, and the sales go through the roof.
Now, I'll tell you right now, if you want to get into a money-making business, Confederate flags, that is now is the time to get in.
I'm worried about what they're trying to bring that flag. Oh, I know, and what I'm saying is, okay, My problem with the whole situation is Black Lives Matter. Okay, all lives matter. But if you want to talk about Black Lives Mattering, what about the violence that happened in Chicago during the 4th of July week? Take care of your communities first. You know what I mean? All lives matter. Black lives do matter. You see where I'm going with this?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, that's a big... People get offended.
Well, no, they do. They do get offended. That's what I'm saying. Somebody needs to put it out in front. If Black Lives Matter, and you're going to spray paint Black Lives Matter on my monuments in Richmond, Virginia, for the Confederate soldiers, do Black Lives Matter in Chicago? If they do, worry about your own communities first. White Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter. But come on now.
Now, see... I think you're absolutely right. And for me, you know, I think we're all part of the exact same community. And to me, saying Black Lives Matter is...
That's racist upon itself.
I'm not going to say I understand, because I understand that there is a difference in this country. But at the same time, we have to come together and work together. And we have to get over black and white. And we can't say white people this, black people this. We have to look at each other as
one race, the human race.
Right, we have to look at each other as one race. And we're here together to fight and work together. And as soon as we fight and work together...
I am with you guys 100%. I'm with you guys. And I hear the whole left and right saying, well... There's a BET, but there's no WET. There's a who cares if there's a white entertainment channel? Who cares if there's a Miss Black America and there's a Miss White America?
We're all American.
It shouldn't be segregated like that.
You bring this point up. There was something that we were kind of talking about before the show. The digging up of Nathan Bedford Forrest's grave.
I saw that today. I was like, I can't believe that.
And at the end of the day, what does it matter?
Right. It's not. And here's the thing. I understand that it's a symbolic thing, but at the same time, it's not going to solve anything. It's not going to fix anything.
It is not.
Stop anybody.
Right.
It's a bunch of white noise to get in the way of what the truth, what's really going on in this country. All of
right.
the jobs that are being shipped overseas through
yes.
the TPP, all of the many, many gross violations done to us are performed to us by our corporate
yes.
fact politicians in Washington. Essentially, employees bought and paid for by the Goldman
yes.
Sachs, by J.P. Morgan Chase, so on and so forth.
I tell you what, thank you so much for
dude, coming. I agree with you guys 100%, but they keep the sheep asleep with sharks in the beaches and the rainbow. Now gay marriage is legal, and we, you know, they keep the mainstream media keeps the sheep sleeping while all the shit's going on behind closed doors. But
they
people like us,
sleeping,
we
keep
see what's going on.
But I tell you what, thank you so much for the call. Fantastic call. We're now going to be joined by Ms. Claire Burnish, who has some fantastic or less than fantastic, really actually horrible news
yeah.
about the economy of the world. Claire,
yeah,
how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Oh, can't complain. I can, but nobody's going to pay attention. So
yeah.
you've had a story go up in the past couple of days about China and the whole situation over there. Why don't you get into that a little bit?
Okay, so China looked, at least before their kind of crashing stock market, looked a lot like ours before our stock market crashed back in 2008-2009. There was a big bubble that was caused by a lot of margin investment, which is people investing in the stock market on borrowed money. So it's kind of almost like fictitious money. And it created this enormous bubble because the Chinese government was trying to prop up their economy after their crash in 2008-2009.
Didn't they infuse, just so people who don't know, didn't they infuse like a large amount of money?
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. Like after their crash in 2008-2009, the government pumped about $20 trillion into their stock market just to kind of prop it up. And they thought that was going to create kind of a steady rise in the economy and everything would go really well. But what happened instead is that the stocks kind of exploded, and it created this enormous bubble like what we had with all the mortgage, that whole mortgage disaster before our crash. And so this bubble was kind of floating along and getting really huge for a number of years, and suddenly everything just pretty much fell apart recently. In less than a month, they lost $3.25 trillion out of the value of their stock market.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it's gone down what now, like 40%? They're around that 40% drop or something?
It was like 32%. They made a little bit of a recovery today, but the thing is with their market, they have a huge portion of people who have invested with this margin debt, you know, the kind of fictitious money. And they're mostly retail investors, which are like private citizens, basically. And they're totally inexperienced. So any wavering in the market, they will just react to it. So if it starts to fall, everybody starts to sell and they panic. And their market has been fluctuating wildly. There were a couple, or at least a few days, where there were more stocks traded than all of the other markets in the world combined. So.
Wow, and this actually ties in to another story that you have just recently written. And this, to me, should be, you know, the headlines across the United States right now, and nobody's really touching it too much, is Eric Holder and what the former attorney general, he's got himself a new job.
Yeah.
He got his old job back.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Right. Yeah. He went back to the same, basically, corporate law firm that he was previously employed with. And they basically make up defenses for these large banks, the ones he was supposed to be prosecuting after the crash. And he's back there as if he never left. And he's going to be, after a period, I think they said 2 years he has to wait, or maybe even just a year, then
it's
he'll be able to defend those same, he'll be able to defend those same banks that he was supposed to be prosecuting. Now, how this is not a conflict of interest, you know, and this revolving door with Washington law and lobbying and politicians, it's ridiculous.
Well, I heard today, and they were talking about, on Democracy Now!, they had Matt Taibbi talking about it, and basically his assumption was is that, you know, there's the two-year waiting period between what Holder can do and, you know, dealing with the Department of Justice with these banks, but they can find a loophole around the law just by having a lawyer as a middleman. So he can do his exact same job as he would be doing 2 years from now, as long as there's somebody in between. And it's not
exactly
breaking the law.
You know, actually, somebody at that firm, Covington & Burling, actually said when she was asked, will he be consulting on the cases, she said no comment. I mean, that's pretty transparent.
Yeah, and the scary thing is did he ever leave his job? I know that
he became
the Attorney General, but look what happened with the banks in this country.
Yeah, he never left the job, and they had saved an office for him, and then they moved their offices to a different building and reserved him an 11th floor corner office. They just left it empty for him, waiting for him to come back.
What else do people need to hear if they don't think that we've been hijacked by these
banks? Well, let me give you an analogy of what this is kind of like. This is kind of like somebody who, let's say, an executive of a defense contractor, like, you know, runs for vice president. And then suddenly starts a bunch of wars to inflate the profit of the company. Oh, wait a minute, that happened. Never mind.
Yeah, I mean, this is just, this is really,
more of the
this
same.
Is really bad.
Yeah, more of the same.
And
yeah.
I don't understand that out of everybody in Obama's administration, the one person that I have pointed to the whole time, like if you're going to convict anybody for any crimes, to me he would be at the top of the list every time. And now he's just spitting in our faces by going back to this job.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, what did he say? This is home for me or something?
Yeah.
I mean, this is crazy.
I mean, you at least have to admire his audacity, both middle fingers up in the air right at the American people.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going on these days, it seems like, from all sides.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't see why he should be any different.
No, he is definitely not.
Yeah.
No, not at all.
So
it's all complicity.
It absolutely is. So how do you think this is the entire China situation, which definitely ties in with Eric Holder and where he's at, how do you think this is going to affect us here in the United States?
Well, that's kind of the big question. Part of the problem is that commodities, particularly like metals and things like that, also futures of oil, which predicts the oil prices and like what the supply will do, how much the supply will cost, those have been actually very much affected. And I guess for some people that's kind of the canary in the coal mine. If gold and silver are dropping and the price of oil is dropping, that means there's going to be like a glut on the market for oil, and that's going to, it will just create all sorts of problems. And with metals prices dropping, like the mint ran out of silver bullion coins within like a couple days once China started going berserk. So, you know, this just, it's not good. Everybody's kind of waiting and everyone's really anxious. All these financial analysts, you know, they have their varying opinions. Some people think that China won't affect us at all. But, you know, China and Greece kind of interplay, and all of the Asian markets dropped when China did, and like all of the European markets dropped when both Greece and China did. So, you know, we did too.
What do you think of this in terms of yesterday? It was big news yesterday, and you haven't heard really much about it today. Is they basically pulled the cord on the stock exchange yesterday morning. And to me, my personal interpretation of it, it was almost like a kid playing a video game. And he saw that he was losing, so he just turned the system off.
Oh, man, we did that all the time when we were kids.
Yeah. But it was like, I see that they saw, because of what was happening in China, something, and maybe, that you know, this is, you know, my own speculation, but they saw that something was about to hit here, and they just pulled the plug before it could.
You know, that's my opinion, too. And obviously, it's not like I'm a financial analyst, but I have kind of followed the markets for a number of years. And there's no way that they looked at China and saw what a mess it was. And when we opened our stock markets that day after China had the big drop, the stock markets were opening at already a 1% loss, like on every index. So for them to, I think they were ready ahead of time to pull the plug if things started to look bad. And we dropped 177 points, which is an awful lot. And then suddenly at about 11:30 in the morning Eastern time, you know, they went offline. It just seems like an awful coincidence. And then, like with inertia, we dropped all the way past 200 points loss. And they waited until after 3 o'clock when there were only two hours left in the business day to make any trades. So any further loss really wouldn't have been that much unless it was an utter disaster. I think that was all planned. I really do.
It definitely seems that way. And not necessarily it was completely planned to the point of we're definitely doing this, but I think that it was a contingency plan they had set up, and if things didn't start looking their way, you know, they were ready to pull the trigger.
That's my thought. I mean, there's no way. And the two excuses I've heard so far is one was a squirrel that ate through the line, and the other was and the other was a software update went haywire. I mean, neither of those sound very.
I tell you what, I like that squirrel story. I'm going to go with that.
I like squirrels.
Reader update. That's make believe, but that squirrel, I'm sure he was chewing.
The update, you can still point at a human or this, that, and the other. How are you going to blame the squirrel? I mean, he's just doing his normal squirrel duties.
I know. Hey, I want to know there can be some evil squirrels.
Oh, you better.
Yeah.
But I tell you what.
This is a mess. It's just a total mess. It's very likely that it's going to drop a lot more. And they have a lot of, at least 43% of the China stock market has been frozen because people pulled out their stocks. The companies pulled out their stocks to prevent any further loss. So it's like they've instituted kind of what Greece had done, or what Iceland had done, capital controls, without actually doing it. That's kind of what they did. So they were hoping that would work, but, you know, nothing they've been doing has worked, really. They gained a little today, but everybody thinks it's still going to drop a lot before it's over.
Yeah, it sounds like China needs more squirrels.
They should ship over some squirrels to give them some freedom.
Yeah, we'll save this really quick.
But, you know, it's like you said, it's kind of like an avalanche, and once the snow starts falling down the hill, there's not much you can do about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Unless you have a really cool squirrel.
Yeah,
on site.
Especially trained wire-eating squirrels. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's sell those. We should sell
them.
Tell
you what. Yeah, forget about that whole Confederate flag business. Let's start raising some trained squirrels.
Let's do that. I'm doing that. This is our last show, everybody, because we're going to go into the business of raising squirrels.
Yeah. We're going to get a defense contract. I'm going to call my Uncle Dick here just a
minute. Yeah, please do it.
Get something worked out.
But I tell you what, Claire, thanks so much for calling in and explaining that to everyone, and hopefully everybody will pay attention more to what's going on over there.
I hope so. Thanks. Have a good night, guys.
You too, ma'am.
Bye, Miss Claire.
Bye.
Area code 956, welcome to Anti-Media Radio. This is your host, S.M. Gibson. Tell us your name and where you're calling from tonight.
My name is Jeremy. I actually just called last night, and I'm calling from Austin, Texas.
Cool.
I was calling because I was listening to the whole conversation right now about the stock market and everything. And with all the stuff that's going on in Greece and the referendum and stuff, if I'm not mistaken, there's someone else that's already ready to bail them out. And apparently the government's going to get ready to go ahead and move forward with that. I'm really hoping that their people don't, because that's just going to be another financial crisis in the later years. But as far as all the economy goes and everything, nothing's ever really going to change. The points and everything that were lost within the past couple of days, or just yesterday really, with China and with the United States and other countries as well, all of that's always going to be a consistent thing. We all know it's probably pretty much mostly manipulated. We've all heard of, economic hitmen. And as well as the fact that we know that they manipulate the oil prices and the prices of metals and and all the resources that we have. I mean, that we've gotten not necessarily an abundance of these things, but the prices that, are put on them, I mean, who really determines all these things? Who's able to say that this is what this is worth, right?
Absolutely.
But with that being said, I mean, the economic crisis is never going to go away, because every single time, it doesn't matter what country it is, what currency it is, if it's under the Federal Reserve or the international banks, the banksters, then that currency that's being printed for them is obviously debt money. And I mean, we, like, the majority of people who are conscious know the fact that every single time a dollar is printed, there is a percentage that is taxed on that single dollar. So therefore, we've never printed enough to even pay back what we owe them.
Oh, not even close. And then the
yeah, thing exactly.
is, too, is like when somebody gets caught red-handed doing something massively illegal, like HSBC, they've been caught funding drug cartels. They've been caught funding terrorism.
Oh, yeah.
No big deal.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, not a big deal. I mean, we've seen stuff. I mean, look, for instance, Afghanistan. Prior to U.S. invasion, Afghanistan accounted for less than 1% of opium. Of the world's production of opium, less than 1%. After U.S. invasion, the Afghanistan country happens to be the mass producer of opiates, and I think it's like up to like 90% now of the world's opium comes from Afghanistan. Prior to U.S. invasion, of less than 1%. I mean, does that really make sense? As well as, I mean, like, we know about Nicaragua. You know, back in the, I think it was like 80s or 70s, CIA funding militants over there to grow cocaine and then transport it and give it to the American citizens. You know, we've all heard about that. They made a movie about it, and still people don't even give a crap.
Exactly. I mean, I tell you, like, what, you make an absolute great point. You know, and it's funny, it's like people say that the U.S. can't do anything productive anymore. Look at the opium production in Afghanistan right now. You can at least applaud them for their production of illegal activity.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, at least we should be able to hold them accountable for something if it's not like what they're doing to us here. I mean, at least we could hold them accountable for that, since we have information. We have the actual sources that prove this is going on. I mean, how are we not going to hold them accountable?
Yeah, we absolutely need to hold them accountable. But I tell you what, thank you so much for calling in. We're going to go ahead and go to another caller right now. Area code 239. Welcome to Anti Media Radio. This is your host, S.M. Gibson. Tell us your name and where you're calling from tonight.
It's my name, Terry Olson. I'm calling from Fort Myers, Florida.
Fort Myers.
Yeah, I'm down in the bottle.
You're not too far from us.
Yeah, I'm close. I'm about 2 hours away from Miami.
Okay.
Okay.
We got a place to crash. We'll go to Miami now. That's awesome.
So, what's on your mind tonight?
Oh, nothing. I just saw something on the news. The press was wondering what's going on. I saw the article about how freedom and religion.
I tell you, we're having some technical difficulties on that, Fort Myers. So if you can call back in, it sounds like a really good call. I tell you what, sitting here at the bottom of the hour, I promised everybody earlier, Mr. Lou Calgiovanni. We're about to get real, about to get down into the dirt, about
good
to talk
times.
About some...
I can't wait to talk about this. This is awesome.
Some real business. Lou, how you doing, sir?
Good evening, sirs. I'm doing quite well, thank you. Very interested and excited to talk about this with you. I know it's a favorite topic of the listeners, so it should be good.
Well, it is, and we start the show off every Tuesday and Thursday with the stats of how many American citizens have been killed by police officers so far this year, and today's unfortunate number is up to 594 for the
almost 600. Wow,
which is just absolutely terrifying. Why don't you tell people real quick about an article that you have almost got completed, and we're about to get up on the site that is just, when I heard about it, like, my jaw dropped. That the 30-page article, just absolutely incredible. Go ahead and tell everybody what's going on.
Well, I basically documented every single person who was killed by police in the month of June. I had found several databases on the internet that had, you know, sometimes the lists were accurate, sometimes they were not, but none of the lists detailed any of the cases. You know, it was just a name, and you had to click to a different link, and if you wanted to view every single case, you know, you had to go back and forth 70, 80 times. I decided to take all of the casework and summarize it and put it into one behemoth of an article, so it's centralized. To me, it isn't even an article. It's more of a resource, and I don't think people will be able to sit down and read through all of it because it's got 74 people, 74 cases, nearly all of them have video clips from local news or police press conferences discussing the cases. It's very large, so hopefully it'll take people longer than you know, a couple hours to look through. People will share it around, spread it around. So, you know, that's what it was. It hasn't been released yet. When I brought it to the editors, I said, did you tell anybody you've been working on this? And, you know, I'm paranoid. I don't like to tell anybody my ideas. So I put the whole thing together without even discussing it with anybody.
I didn't know about it until today. And I was talking to Nick. He's like, so what are we going to do with Louis' article here? And I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, there's this masterpiece 30-page article about everybody that's been shot in the month of June. And it's just like, wow. And you know, it's unfortunate that that article even needs to be written. And
exactly. I think it's necessary, though, because, you know, one thing that we always do at the very beginning of the show, when we give the stats, we don't go to the individual names. We don't go to the individual stories. And this story right here actually puts a face.
Yes. On those, this personalizes on that number that we get out every episode.
That, you know, I took the content, and it's a completely it's a nonpartisan, no opinion piece. I didn't share my opinions on any of the cases because some of the cases were, in my opinion, very ridiculous. Probably talk about those later. Some of them to me seemed justified, but there's no opinion, so I thought that would be better in, you know, breaching the gap between, you know, people, because it's not meant to be anti-police or defensive police. It's just supposed to be information. It's just supposed to be facts.
And, you know, that's what the media should be. That's what the media, that's what it's intended to be, is here's information. You're going to learn what's going on in the world now, but unfortunately it's become somebody yelling their opinion down their throat.
Right. So I had no opinion. Maybe I'll break it down, different cases with different opinions, you know, but you're right. It's just, it's ridiculous. So hopefully this will shed some light on some cases. A lot of them were frankly tragic. I think that if people look through this, the individuals who have, because I'm not necessarily the biggest advocate of police, but I think if individuals look through this, they'll see that the situation is not necessarily as black and white as it is made out to be. There are a lot of cases in here where it was just a very unfortunate situation. A lot of cases of individuals who are suffering from mental health problems, who had weapons. So it's not a black and white case. A lot of these cases, it's like, well, what would the public have done if there weren't police officers to respond to these calls? You know, and then you get into the anarchistic questions, right, about stuff like that. But, you know, to me, it really illuminates the situation. Hopefully it would be illuminating for others as well.
And I'm sure, you know, you saw some cases in there where you saw, you know, that this person was a threat to somebody, and the police did handle it in the right way. But on the flip side of that, like, give us a case, for example, that really, like, stuck out to you that you were just like, I don't know about any of this, and why did this happen? And you know, there's somebody now that's having to be buried, and their family's having to bury somebody, and, you know, this should have never happened.
Okay. Well, on June 22nd, there was an individual by the name of Robert Kinkle from O'Fallon, Missouri. His mother called 911 on him, said her son was hallucinating. Kinkle was found in the street screaming for help. And Kunkel complied with the police officers. He wasn't under arrest. He was placed in an ambulance. He was on his way to the hospital. And then Kunkel broke free from the stretcher, jumped out of a moving ambulance, stopped, dropped, and rolled. And the police then, they caught him quickly. They caught him within a couple of blocks. They found him in a neighbor's house.
Was he in the house or was he in front of the house?
Oh, I'm sorry. No, they found him in a neighbor's backyard.
Okay.
They found him in a backyard. Police made contact with him. Kunkel was aggressive, allegedly, in the backyard. You know, and I have to preface, I'm going to break my story. It's all allegedly what has happened here because these cases aren't going to go in front of a judge. You're not going to go in front of a jury. There's going to be no finding of fact. There's going to be no evidentiary hearings. So the only information we have is from the police's perspective. So let me just put that out there.
And I think to your point real quick, just so the listener has a bit of a reference for that, is the case that we've dealt with in South Carolina recently. When that case just came out, it was the police officer was attacked, the assailant grabbed, you know, his taser, and the officer shot him. And in 2 days later, there's a video comes out, and there's somebody shot in the back 8 times, and there's a taser being dropped by the guy.
Exactly.
So yeah. I think, to your point, that's something that's very important. It's all allegedly.
Right, yeah. We don't know for a fact. We just have to. This is the content that was created is based on police reports, and that's it. So everything that's described is from the perspective of police. So Mr. Kunkel was found in the backyard. At that time, they say Kunkel was being aggressive, but he did respond to police commands. He went to the ground. And then when police attempted to place handcuffs on Kunkel, he became combative and started to kick at them. But according to the report, police didn't, start to bludgeon the man because they knew that he was under, you know, some type of hallucinogen or having some type of mental breakdown. So, and this is because you asked me what did I think was fishy about this. The police report says that they attempted to, quote, calm Mr. Kunkel without elaboration whatsoever and what manner they attempted to calm him. And then after they attempted to calm him, the police report goes, he suddenly became quiet and ceased resistance. And then Kunkel was rushed to a hospital where he was pronounced dead.
Wait, whoa.
That's all the information we have. That's it.
So he calms down, and then he's dead.
They say they were attempting to, and I'm using quotes, the police report said they attempted to calm Kunkel. And in this period of attempting to calm this individual, he died. And there's no elaboration at what they did to calm him. There's not going to be an investigation into his death. It's just he suddenly became quiet and ceased resistance. So
kind of like they calmed Freddie Gray down, right?
Right, yeah, they just calmed him down. In this case, he wasn't thrown in the back of a paddy wagon. He just died in a backyard. And, you know, this is a case where even if there is an autopsy, the autopsy information won't go anywhere. The coroner's report won't determine anything. It's just being treated as a death. Just this 38-year-old guy just died. To me, it's a case where, you know, there should be a grand jury. There should be evidentiary hearings. Something like this should be vetted out in the public square. It shouldn't just be brushed under the rug.
Yeah, and even in all these cases, you know, in defense of the officers that do have to, you know, apprehend somebody violently and it does lead to a person's death, even those should be put out in the public square, I think, because if the officer was justified, then, you know, that's for the officer's benefit to clear him, that he is there to serve the community. But at the same time, that goes to serve us and the community because when something is done wrong, you know, we're protected as well. And I think every case should be put out in front of the public.
Exactly, sir. Exactly. And, you know, it's a little off topic, but in the United States, there's only one state in our nation where it's a state law that says police officers, like the local police department, if they have officers involved in a death of a suspect, that there's only one state that says that police department can't investigate its own officers and its own death. And that state is Wisconsin. It's in their state constitution that can't happen. An outside agency has to come in. In every other state, police officers are free to investigate their buddies. You know, the prosecutor's office investigates. To me, it's just it's a travesty, and it goes and it plays on the idea that these these cases are not discussed in public.
I mean, it's just, it's really terrifying. And it's the concealment of facts that is the scariest part of it, because so many people don't realize is they could be walking down the street tomorrow, they could be shot in the back of the head by a cop, and then there could just be some story put out there and you tried to assault somebody and that's it. And nobody ever hears what happened.
You get an inch in the paper and that's all you get, and people don't care. There's so much violence in the world, it's just, they just assume, you know, the individual is guilty. You know, very often we find that that's not the case. So, you know, it's, that's why this article was written. You know, hopefully it'll shed some light on stuff like this. I mean, there were just a lot of bizarre cases. I mean, I got several that I'd like to share with you.
Yeah, what else? Go ahead and run through some others.
Okay. To me, this is the most disturbing case. It's not the most egregious case, but it's the most disturbing. It happened on June 14th. It involved two teenagers in Florida. The individual who was killed by police, his name was Zane Terryn, T-E-R-R-Y-N. He's 15 years old from Palm Bay, Florida. Basically what happened is Mr. Terryn and his girlfriend, Morgan McNeil, who's 16 years old, were at a gas station. They were driving a truck. A cop came up to them to talk to them because apparently, according to the police report, their taillight was broken. The cop asked, and the girlfriend was driving, Ms. McNeil was driving. The police officer asked to see her ID. She went back to the driver's side to get her ID because she was filling up gas in her car. Mr. Terryn was still in the vehicle. When she comes back out of the car, Terryn gets out of the car as well and starts opening fire on this cop unprompted. Shoots the cop in the chest. Cop opens fire, hits Terryn multiple times. He dies. The 16-year-old girl, McNeil, she gets in the vehicle and flees and is apprehended a few blocks down the road. And then she has been charged with attempted murder, burglary, and a bunch of other stuff. And after the death, it was found out that Terryn and McNeil had stolen the vehicle. They had stolen thousands of dollars from their family members, and they had stolen the gun that McNeil used. And they were fleeing the state in a suicide pact, and they were going to get across state lines. They were going someplace, and they were going to kill each other.
Wow.
Huh.
Yeah. Just very strange, very, very, very tragic case, you know. And I don't know anything about Terryn's or McNeil's family life. What would have prompted them to take this action? You know, I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't even know really how to respond to that. How, what information did the police department provide to suggest that they knew that these kids were in a suicide pact?
That information came from family members, and apparently there was, you know, I don't know what the whole deal was, but the suicide pact information came from family. There may have been a note. I don't have that in my article regarding that. I didn't look into every individual, you know, I didn't go through the backstory of every single case because I was summarizing. You know, I wasn't doing pieces on everybody. So I don't know necessarily why they were going to kill themselves, what their ultimate plans were. You know, that type of information is just unknown at this time.
Wow. Anything else that stuck out to you? I mean, this is just fascinating. And I think, you know, when this comes out, I think this is going to be massively important for people to read.
I hope so. Because I spent a week, a little over a week on this. I mean, there's a lot of cases that stick out to me. And you know, when we originally came out, I was talking about all these cases deal with mental health. There were at least 15 cases of the 74 that were suicide by cop or were believed to be suicide by cop, where individuals, well, here, I'll break down one case for you. It happened June 19th. Individual's name was Trey Pierre Hummins. He's a 21-year-old from Cincinnati, Ohio. Mr. Hummins called 911 to report a person who was, quote, belligerently behaving with a gun in the street, right? So, but the facts now prove that Mr. Hummins called police to lure them to the location because he was attempting to commit suicide by cop. So when the police arrive, Hummins is in the street, and Hummins opens fire on police, shoots one, kills an officer, and then the police return fire, his responding partner, or the other officer in the vehicle. returns fire on Hummins, killing him. And, you know, it's a tragic situation. We don't know what Mr. Hummins' mental health situation was. We don't know if he was disturbed or in need of help in some way. But he made a phony 911 call because there was nobody in the street with a gun. The person in the street with a gun was him, and it hadn't happened yet.
Now, let me ask you this. Now, in that instance, he did kill another officer.
Yeah, as soon as the officer arrived, he opened fire on the police officer before he had an opportunity to react. And he shot him once and killed him, shot him in the chest.
See, now for me personally, and maybe you disagree with this, Lou, like if somebody has shot to the point like there's an officer dead, then you can shoot back. But at the same time, we deal with so many cases over and over and over, like the one you talked about earlier, it's like there's just somebody there, and all of a sudden the next thing you know, they're dead. They're gone.
Right.
And to me, those are the ones that just are like punching me in the stomach.
You know, it has a lot to do with police training, how to deal with armed individuals. You know, to me, it's an entirely different show. We get into subjects of militarized police, why police are so aggressive, stuff like that.
Oh, absolutely.
I agree with you to an extent, but I also agree that police officers have some leeway to protect themselves. You know, there's a great clip, I can't think of the guy's name right now, but he went into a courtroom to show just how, it was back in the 80s, it was a Texas Ranger guy, and he got into an altercation in a parking lot, and he said the guy kind of flinched, and then he shot the guy in the head, and his defense was, I'm so fast with my weapon that I just drew down and shot him. And the guy did have a gun, but they were trying to charge him for murder because the witnesses say the guy didn't reach for his weapons. So then the officer, the ranger, goes in the courtroom and shows just how quick he is. They, you know, they had like a speed camera and recorded him. He's able to draw his weapon in less than a second and shoot it. So, you know, to me it's a whole different conversation.
But you know, and for me, I look at police officers no different than I look at any other human being. And you know, if me and my friend are in a situation, we don't have badges on, we're just there, and my friend gets shot, you know, if I fired back and you know, killed somebody, that's a different scenario to me as opposed to somebody that's completely unarmed, that you have no business even pulling your weapon on, and then somebody ends up dead, and you're exonerated for it because you have a nice little badge on your chest.
Right. And, you know, I have a case. It was June 25th. It was in Baltimore. It received nationwide coverage. I'm not sure if we covered it at Anti-Media. It was in Baltimore. Individual's name was Spencer Lee McCain. Does that sound familiar to you?
A little bit, but I don't know the entire story in its detail.
Okay. So McCain was involved allegedly in a domestic dispute with his, wasn't even his ex-girlfriend. Police described McCain as an estranged associate of Shannon Salton. So basically, McCain and Salton are in Salton's home. There's an altercation going on. Salton's child calls their grandmother to tell them that there's a fight going on. The grandma calls 911. Police get to the home. They don't knock. They break down the door, which in and of itself, you know, maybe they believe they perceived there was a threat, but this is also Baltimore, very aggressive police force. So they come in without knocking. Several officers open fire on Mr. McCain because when they encountered McCain, they said he was in a, quote, defensive position, which made them believe that he had a gun. So four officers broke into the home, four officers opened fire on Mr. McCain, killing him, and later the search proved there was no weapon in the house. He didn't have a gun. So that's
that makes me want to start throwing things through windows. That's infuriating to me. And especially
right.
When there's four officers opening fire. Like,
right, in a home.
Right. They came into some man's home. Who's not going to be defensive when somebody busts down your door? Who's not going to be that way?
Right. And then the Ms. Salton, she was found with swollen eyes, cuts on her mouth, and defensive scratches on her forearms, which, you know, can't prove it now, but leads one to believe that there was an altercation going on. I don't know about the freshness of the cuts or the bruises or anything like that. But to me, you know, I work for Intermedia, but I'm also the national crime reporter for exam.com, so I do a lot of this crime stuff. And to me, that's indicative of a domestic assault. Should the guy have been shot to death by four police officers because he had a defensive position? No, absolutely not. And there was no indication that he had a weapon. There was just a domestic dispute going on. So to me, this is a case where police were too aggressive. And, you know, had this happened 20 or 30 years ago, maybe the police officers would have been charged, you know, with some type of manslaughter or you know, situation like that. But that's not going to happen today. This is just going to be brushed under the rug. McCain was assaulting somebody. Police came, shot him, and people say, good, fuck him. I'm sorry, I can't say that, but, you know, people say, good.
Right.
He was assaulting somebody, he should be dead. But that's not the case. I think that he should have went to court, should have had a proper trial, because that's what we believe in the United States. You're not, he wasn't guilty of anything because he hadn't been convicted of anything. He was suspected of assaulting his girlfriend.
But we have come to the point in this country, Lou, unfortunately, that there is a large majority of this country that says, well, you were breaking the law, so you get the death penalty. And yeah. they don't acknowledge that that's what they think, but
right.
That's how they phrase it, basically. In the case of Michael Brown, it's like, well, he robbed that store. We've all seen that on video. We saw him rob that store, and so they're like, well, he's dead. Yeah, he was robbing a store. So you rob a store, death penalty. That's how
right,
people
yeah.
justify that. That's crazy.
That's not how things work in a civilized society under law. You know, that is just that's a case where individuals take their opinions and their opinions slide back and forth so they can find a position that most favors them at the time. You know, that means that they don't believe that an individual has a right to not incriminate themselves. An individual doesn't have a right to a trial, a fair and speedy, impartial trial, either from a jury of their peers or a bench trial. You know, people like that, in my opinion, are doing a disservice to this country because they're not standing up for the rule of law. They're not standing up for the Constitution. They're just saying, well, you know, he was obviously a bad person, so he stole a Snickers bar, some papers, or some cigarillos, or whatever the guy stole, and that's the end of the day. Now, of course, you know, you get in the Mike Brown case. Well, to me, that was a big debacle in and of itself.
It is, but the irony is the people that are, you know, basically saying that was okay and justified are the same people that are the biggest flag wavers and are the biggest, you know, quote-unquote patriots and love the Constitution, and yet that's the most unconstitutional thing you can do is to shoot somebody because of whatever scenario may or may not have taken place. We know he didn't have a weapon on him, so, you know, it goes back to what I said earlier. If, you know, if there's a cop shot or there's my friend shot next to me, I am going to open fire. You know, that is what that is. But when you're talking about someone that's completely unarmed and then somebody can justify that, to me, Eric Garner, Tamir Rice, those are the most egregious cases that we've seen. We have Garner on video getting choked out, and that's just like, whatever. He was selling cigarettes. Like, are you serious? Like, that's not even really against the law anywhere, just in New York. But it's okay to kill it. And that's what infuriates me, is the mentality of these people that excuse murder because it fits into their belief system.
Right, that's exactly what it is. It's murder. It's murder by police who are being judge, jury, and executioner. I've got more cases. I mean, I got other 74 cases. Let's go through a couple more if we can.
Yeah, run through it real quick. We got a few minutes left, but yeah, hit on some.
Okay, so this is June 8th. This is a case to me very bizarre. June 8th, Mario Ocasio, he's 51 years old from Bronx, New York. So Mr. Ocasio allegedly was attempting to attack his girlfriend while she was in a battered women's shelter. The girlfriend called 911. The shelter's manager called 911. When police arrived, Ocasio is holding a pair of scissors, which he refuses to drop, allegedly. After a 30-minute standoff, police tase Mr. Ocasio. He's taken into custody. And here's where it gets strange. After he's taken into custody, the EMTs on the scene administer two drugs to him. They administer Versed, which is a painkiller, and then they also administered Narcan, which is a drug that reverses the effects of heroin. Because at the time, I don't know, you know, what training these individuals have, but it was believed that Mr. Ocasio was high on heroin. After the drugs were administered to this man, he went into cardiac arrest, was transported to the hospital, and after he arrived, he died an hour after arriving at the hospital. So here's a guy who was probably beating his girlfriend, probably was being belligerent. But why are drugs being administered to him at the scene? You know, and these drugs that were given to him more than likely, in conjunction with being tased. You know, he's 51 years old, don't know what his physical state was. He very well could have died just by being injected from the drugs, because he hadn't had a heart attack yet from being tased. So, you know, to me, it's just it doesn't sit well with me that is what happened in this case.
Here's the red flag for me on that, and I don't know your personal experience with this, Lou, and I don't have a great one-on-one experience with this, but I have seen it and been around it a few times with a couple of people that, you know, I grew up with somebody on heroin. When you're in the room with somebody that's on heroin, from what I've experienced, they're not beating women to the point where, you know what I'm saying? It's just, that's not the mentality of that person at the time.
Right. It's like somebody stoned to the bone, so I don't understand exactly why he was so wild.
Can't even get up out of the chair.
Right, yeah. Exactly. So, you know, you're not sitting there being violent on that drug because you're so out of your mind.
Right. So why did they give him Narcan to begin with? Who knows? It's never going to go in front of a grand jury. Bet you guys $1,000 right now, that's never going to happen.
Yeah.
I will not take that bet.
Yeah, and that's a huge red flag for me personally.
Right. So, you know, that was the case. What do we got, 5 minutes? Let's do a couple more.
It
was June 8th. There's an individual. To me, this is a whatnot case. It's June 8th. James Johnson, 54, Beecher Grove, Indiana. He was alleged to have been on his front porch waving around a handgun. Neighbors called police. Upon the arrival of police, Mr. Johnson allegedly refused to put down his weapon, and according to witnesses, said, shoot me, kill me, kill me. Witnesses further said that police told Johnson to drop his weapon at least 25 times.
25, really?
That's what witnesses say. Like I said, you know, this never went to a judge. We'll never see the video. A jury will never decide. That's what they say happened. And then Johnson allegedly began to point his weapon at police. They shot him once, shot a single shot, and they killed him. And there are a lot of cases like this where there are instances where the facts that we have today, or the not the facts, but the information that we have today, pointed towards that an individual, you know, wanted to die, and which is never, you know, can't condone suicide, anything like that. But to me, it's just that case sticks out as just disturbing and tragic. You know, it was not a good thing.
Every case is super tragic in this. I tell you something that struck me, and I don't want to really go down this path real quick. We only got just a couple minutes here left. But the way these police reports are written, and if you look at like how police reports were written for the Kennedy assassination, the way these police reports are written, you see that, like automatically it's being fired from the grassy knoll. When you have all these witnesses saying something, to me it's just completely ironic, and I know that's way off topic, but
we could get into all that stuff with the magic bullet and Mr. Now deceased Arlen Specter, who came up with that great theory. You know, yeah.
For me, it's like all these witnesses say something, but they're all crazy and wrong. But in this other case, right, when all these witnesses say something, no, that's the gospel.
Right. Well, you know, if we go into witness statements, we're talking about Mike Brown. We had the case of the Mike Brown witness going around for a month, saying he saw Brown shot with his hands up, and then a month later he comes back and recants and said he never saw it. Now, witnesses have an interest to lie, either because it was friends or they were frustrated or because they're trying to get attention. You know, because it's witness statements by their nature shouldn't be taken as 100% fact. But it was that case wasn't a widely reported case. A lot of the information was witness statements. You know, and it's never going to be investigated further, so that's all we know. And that's all that's going to be known unless some private investigator takes it upon himself or herself to look into it further. That's unfortunate that's the case.
I think you nailed it on the head. I tell you what, Lou, thank you so much for writing this article. I think people are going to learn a lot from it. I think they're going to learn about a lot of cases and a lot of situations that they never, ever, ever, ever would have heard about. So I commend you again for doing the due diligence for getting this written.
Thank you very much, sir. I hope everybody likes it. Hopefully editing staff will get done with it tomorrow or the day after. It's a lot of work, so it's a team effort. Everybody's been working on it.
Absolutely, sir. So, thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a good night.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, in time to your radio, we'll be back next month. Here we go, through the stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow.
I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.